Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to session 60 on Razor's Edge, which I imagine everyone has. Razor's Edge and pain point are kind of two phrases that are hand in hand. My name is Dave Cook. I'll be moderating this session. I've got background in parish stewardship and diocesan appeals, so I'm personally very interested in our speakers this morning. Currently here as a member of Queen of Apostles Catholic Church in Arlington, Virginia, Diocese of Arlington. To introduce briefly our speakers, and they'll have a chance to introduce themselves. We have TJ Wilson, Rebecca Hancock, and Matt Walcott from Letter Concepts, Cathedral Corporation, part of the Cathedral Corporation. Before passing on the mic to them, could we please say the prayer, the conference prayer? Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. Okay, over to you, TJ.
All right. Do you guys need the mic from him? Yeah, if you don't mind. Good morning, everybody. As Dave mentioned, my name is TJ Wilson from Letter Concepts, a cathedral company. I have Rebecca and Matt here to my right. So my official title is Vice President of Diocesan Sales. Primarily I deal with diocesan clients, helping them with, every level of what they're working on, from, graphic design, copywriting, direct mail, lockbox, data, you name it, we do it. So anyways, and there's a fun picture of us, selfie from last night. So I'm going to kick it over and let Rebecca and Matt introduce themselves, tell a couple of fun facts, and then we'll jump into today's presentation.
Hi, my name is Matt Walcott. I've been with Letter Concepts for 8 years now. I do pretty much everything related to data in terms of the cleansing of the data for the direct mail campaigns, anything from analytics, reporting on it. I do a lot of onboarding with clients in terms of kind of the process flow throughout our company to make sure your service agreement and everything is aligning and the expectations are being met, and then answer any kind of troubleshooting questions or whatever that may come up too.
Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. My name is Rebecca Hancock, and I am the newest recruit at Letter Concepts. I just joined the team 3 months ago. However, I'm not new to working with Letter Concepts. Prior to joining the ranks of LCI, I worked with them for over 5 years. I was sitting in a seat much like yours. I was director of annual giving and stewardship for the Catholic Foundation of Southeastern Massachusetts. So I was doing all things annual giving and stewardship for the Diocese of Fall River. So I'm blessed to be able to now sit in a new seat, but also still serve my home diocese and everyone at the diocese. And prior to that, just as some added context, I cut my teeth in marketing, communications, and development in higher ed and healthcare at Brown University, Rhode Island Hospital, and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston.
Awesome. So, yeah, these two are definitely my, I guess not better halves, my better thirds, I should say. So they're both excellent, and I'm lucky to have them here with me. So, the Letter Concepts story, I'll keep it brief. My dad and my uncle founded the company in 1989. So, you could say I grew up in Catholic fundraising. So, I started working for them, I guess, unofficially when I was 12, sweeping the floors in the warehouse. But officially, in 2017, I came on board to work with my dad, you know, trying to grow the company, you know, try and help as many dioceses as we can with, you know, their development work. So I'm going to jump over to today's key takeaways, you know, just a brief overview of what we would like to accomplish and, you know, impart to everyone here. As Dave mentioned, the title of the presentation is Razor's Edge and Beyond. And like he said, Razor's Edge and Pain Point kind of, you know, go hand in hand. It's a wonderful tool, but sometimes it's a little difficult to work in. So we're not just going to talk about Razor's Edge. I'll get to that at the end of this. We work in many, many CRMs. So, you know, Razor's Edge is obviously probably the behemoth that most people work with, but, you know, we're comfortable working in any number of different database solutions. So some of the takeaways today, Rebecca is going to talk a lot about our segmentation and gift charting processes, so how you can segment your direct mail, how you can communicate to different parts of your donor base. So there's a lot of great stuff there. Matt is going to talk about data entry, gift processing, lockbox. We have a full lockbox service, and he's going to get into some of the great stuff that he does there. And then a few other things, data maintenance, how to keep your diocesan database up to date and in sync with your parishes. Rebecca will talk to that, and she's got a lot of good stuff to share there. And then queries and exports and reporting, that'll be Matt again, talking about, you know, not just in Razor's Edge, but in many other kinds of databases and how we can work with our clients to help them achieve what they need, whatever level of work that entails. So before we jump in, who works in Razor's Edge right now? Show of hands. All right, that's what I thought. Does anybody work in Portfolio from Emergent? Anybody? Ooh, nobody. Okay. Any other CRMs, Salesforce? Salesforce? Okay. Salesforce? Anybody work in anything else besides PDS?
Virtuous.
Virtuous. Okay. Excellent. So, you know, a lot of this will be, like I said, tailored to Razor's Edge, as many of you are in that database, but, you know, we can work in other platforms as well. So I'm going to kick it over to Rebecca to talk about data segmentation and some of the work that we do and some of the work that our clients do.
Thanks, TJ. Well, before I get going, I'm going to sit down because I'm actually wearing stilettos and I don't think the guys are. Since we're going to settle in and be here for a little bit. Okay, so we're going to start this presentation with a few slides dedicated to data segmentation and the building blocks of segmentation and the many ways you can slice and dice the data that's at your fingertips to speak to key targeted members of your donor audience. So not a one-size-fits-all story you're telling or package you're sending. So perhaps the first and most notable way to do this is through levels of giving and the establishment of giving societies. Here you can see samples of materials produced not only for those who already give at the required entry level for inclusion into these societies, but also consider that group that's right in that sweet spot window of giving that maybe just dances right along the boundary or the precipice of inclusion in a giving society. What do I mean by that? Most of these giving societies have an entry level gift of, say, $1,000. But check out who has been faithfully and consecutively giving for several years, perhaps at the $500, $750, or $900 level. And you definitely want to make sure that you're speaking to them, maybe including a buck slip. You're not necessarily going whole hog with all of these materials because, you know, the higher up you go, kind of the fancier the package becomes. But you do want to let folks know that there are member benefits to be included in this society and this community. And then once you've looked at the data and determined who should be captured in a top-tier package versus a general audience package, pretty much anything can be produced and customized from there. Here you see custom letters and pledge devices for the Archdiocese of Chicago, their Lumen Cordium Society, an insert explaining the tiered benefits for the Good Shepherd Society in the Diocese of Austin, Texas, and they do an awesome job of bringing people up, sort of cultivating them in an upward motion and letting them know that as your giving increases, you're going to end up getting more back. So it could be everything from a Christmas ornament to a special donor reception to an audience with the bishop or an archbishop. So the more you give, the closer you are held, you know, by the diocese, and the more you're invited to the table. And then a four-panel brochure for Brooklyn's Court of Honor Society. All giving societies based on giving levels. And I know that things probably look microscopic, especially to the folks who are in the back of the room. We do have a show book up here, complete with all of the hard copy materials. So invite you to come up and linger after the presentation. Get your hands dirty with it. We don't mind at all. You can take things out of the book and just kind of flip through and really read through and maybe get some good ideas. Okay, Teach. All right, so after your asks are out the door, you're not done segmenting. It's going to be time eventually to thank these generous donors for their support coming forward with a gift or a pledge. And really, the thank you program should mimic your ask in terms of what your top donors receive as a word of thanks versus the general donor population. And you can achieve this in a few key ways. You can do it in a tangible way, like you're seeing up on screen for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. These are the thank you materials that they send out for their St. Charles Borromeo Seminary appeal. They do a very distinct approach in terms of the materials that top tier donors get. They get a full page thank you, either from the head of the seminary or the archbishop. They also get a planned giving buck slip. Planned giving is probably a phrase you've heard time and time again during this conference and hopefully over the past few years, because it's definitely a needed component of any giving program. And then for the more general donors, up to, I believe for Philadelphia, it's about $250 is the cutoff point. They'll receive still a very attractive full color, but just a direct mail postcard, also giving them a note of thanks. So also, it could be a simpler approach. So you could just approach your thank yous with a variety of different letters, thanking folks for their gift, maybe ushering them or welcoming them in to a giving society. So it's the first time they see the name of the giving society as a member. They're feeling included. They're feeling part of a community. And it's that recognition time and time again. And then however you choose to do it, just always remember you should approach thanking your donors in just as tailored a way as when you're asking them for a donation. So never a one-size-fits-all kind of approach. Thanks. This is an interesting approach to segmentation. So this is based on geography or zip code. The Archdiocese of Hartford, Connecticut does this. They're a very event-driven, event-centric annual giving program. They hold a variety of events each year, kicking off their annual appeal. And what they do is they divide their archdiocesan database into two groups, the northern group and the southern group. And they send out two distinct invitations based on the donor's location. They either get an invite to attend a series of events held in the north or a series of events held in the south. They can choose one, whichever one makes the most sense for them. Now, Hartford also segments its priests with this set of events. That's not shown here, but the priests in the northern part of the archdiocese versus the ones in the southern part can attend all of these events. So this is a segmentation approach based on zip code, geography, but it also really makes sense in terms of an aging donor population. Don't know about everyone in the room, but in the Northeast, our donor population is definitely getting up there in years. And a lot of our donors really have a lifestyle that is restricted to about a 10-block radius. They don't want to get, as much as they'd love to go, they don't want to get in the car and drive 50 60, 80 miles to attend an event. So we try to bring the event to where they are. Donors want the convenience of an event that's close to home, even younger donors. Time is money, too. And also the bonus of an audience with the Archbishop is a real draw. You can also segment by age if your data is sophisticated enough and layered enough. Hartford does a cocktail and beer hour that is really geared towards younger donors. So it's a way to foster relationships with the next generation of givers. Okay. And here's just, in closing, some other various segmentation approaches, taking a deeper dive into giving histories. You can also refine your house list to target only certain subgroups by parish. We always recommend that you include in your annual giving repertoire an outreach from the pastor. Now, depending on the specific climate or environment in your diocese arch, you may want to lead with the pastor letter. That's what the Diocese of Fall River always did. It was just ingrained in the culture that folks would hear first from their pastor. It can really turn the dial. As much as folks maybe love and respect their bishop, their ordinary, they have an affinity and a relationship usually with their parish priest. So we want to make sure at all times that they are hearing from them, whether it be the first mailing, the second mailing, or the third. And perhaps it's time to shake things up a bit and experiment with the cadence of your mailings. But regardless, just always have that touch point from the priest. And then also parish-specific mailers, of course, can be customized with the pastor's signature, specialized stationery, colors, fonts, imagery, whatever is unique to that parish. We take that all in, and we make sure that every single segment is treated as an individualized parish-based outreach. And then you can also produce pledge cards with general ask strings based on parish average gifts. If you know the demographics of a parish and you say, well, we know that St. Pius can definitely bear a much larger average gift than St. Joseph's. Or, if you want to do it that way instead of by individual is also a great approach, of course. We also do language segmentation. Oftentimes we've got bilingual and trilingual parishes that we work with. Brooklyn has, I don't know, how many?
14.
14 languages in the Diocese of Brooklyn and Queens. So as you get a little bit bigger and a little bit more sort of multicultural, we're able to handle all of that as well. And don't forget to segment your priests. Active clergy versus retired clergy are definitely two very unique and distinct audiences. We have found that oftentimes it's the retired clergy who are by and large the most dedicated and generous in terms of priest donors. So you want to isolate that group and really talk to them in a way that pays homage and pays respect to their lifetime of service. They like to get a message and an ask that gives a nod to really their lifetime of dedication to their diocese. And then, of course, we have the giving histories. We all know the Libunts and the Sibunts. But pay special attention to those non-donors. Acquisition is very important. Don't ignore them. If they have not yet made a gift, that doesn't mean that they won't necessarily decide to give this year. And loyalty. We were talking a lot about giving societies based on tiered giving, gift levels. Don't forget the little old lady who lives in, a triple-decker apartment who's been giving $25 or $50 nonstop faithfully for the last 40 or 45 years. She also wants to belong, and she also wants to be a member of a society. So a loyalty society is really important to consider. And then you can also segment letters that speak to different chunks of your donor population, including recurring givers. So I'm going to hand things over to TJ once again, because from a data perspective, recurring donors are a very interesting group. They have so many different requests about scheduling and when they're giving should begin, when they should end, special billing requests. And then how do you speak to these donors and maintain or even grow their generosity over the course of their giving lifetime?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was funny. I was just talking with Dave, our moderator, right before this, and we were talking about his difficulties in having proper reporting on recurring donors, pulling that out, being able to identify, okay, you gave this much in this year, but you signed up to give in perpetuity. How do we keep moving you up? Are you giving every month? Are you giving quarterly? It's a little bit more difficult to report on than your standard pledge because, again, it's set up to go to infinity. So this sample I have here is from the Diocese of Austin, and we went through some growing pains, especially in presenting the option to make a recurring gift on a pledge card, especially to, you know, a more aging population. We really wanted to make it as clear as possible. This is your intention of what you're doing with this gift. For the first couple of years, I can't tell you how many times someone would call up and say, oh, I wanted to give $500 total. I did not want to give $500 every single month. So, you know, right here, gift frequency and donor clarity are very, very important. And pulling that data out, identifying this person is a recurring giver. Here's the frequency of what they're giving. Here's what they're giving in total for the year. Touching base with them every single year, giving them the opportunity to increase. You know, they don't have to, obviously, but we want to give them that opportunity and put in front of them what they gave in the past year. And again, giving them the option, choose a monthly gift or a one-time gift, and then also, you know, until I ask you to stop or for 12 months. So the option, you can do it as a pledge or you can set it up, like we're talking about, as a recurring gift. Few other ways, you know, just additional segmentation approaches that didn't fit in with what Rebecca was talking about earlier with online campaigns, landing pages, emails, things like that. You can go all the way down to, you know, a personalized URL to every single one of your donors. Bridget Daly sitting back there knows all about pearls. I'm sure everyone's very familiar with her as well, but, you know, trying to segment and understand this person was a non-donor. They went to the non-donor giving page. They made that gift. This person was a donor. This person was a Libon. Having different landing pages that give you that data specifically for online campaigns is very, very helpful. And a similar thing with email campaigns, being able to track that, being able to identify good emails. Matt does a lot of work with taking emails from our, you know, diocesan clients, running them up against different directories to make sure that we're not getting massive bounce backs on emails, which can obviously be a problem. So helping with the cleanup there too. And then finally, social media campaigns. I'm sure all of us are trying our best to, you know, reach our donors via social media. We've helped a lot of our clients, you know, in various different ways, doing different languages in the social media campaigns, English, Spanish, you know, whatever you're looking to do there, doing a social media campaign for current donors versus non-donors, you know, a different messaging to them. Do we do a video or do we do a static ad? Video. Always do a video. That's my opinion. They get a much better response. We're making video content at the beginning of every appeal year. We can chunk that up. We can use that in our social media campaigns and put that in front of a lot more people. So that's always our recommendation. But, you know, if the sophistication isn't there, we can always go with a static campaign too. And then Google versus Facebook. I'm a big fan of doing Facebook advertising. It's much more personal. You know, we're attaching to a donor's profile. We're able to put it in front of them. And also, the campaigns are run through a diocesan Facebook account, the Catholic Foundation Facebook account. You're enabling that donor to then follow you and receive news, not just for the appeal, but for everything that's going on in your diocese or archdiocese.
So something I want to add to this recurring too, in terms of like your segmentation for your ask amounts, depending on your landing page and how they've signed up for recurring gift and their frequency, you know, taking into account the person might be recurring on an annual basis or they might be recurring on a quarterly basis and factoring that into the segmentation so that we're not just doing plus five, plus 10, plus $20 on a monthly basis. We have to multiply that out annually and then present that information if the donor is a once a year recurring annual donor. These online campaigns that TJ had mentioned, they can supplement the direct mail, or they can kind of stand alone and you can do a campaign that is an online campaign without a direct mail component as well. So data entry and gift processing in Lockbox. As many of you know, Letter Concepts offers a comprehensive turnkey processing service that handles everything from data management to gift processing. We process pledge devices, remittance forms, in-pew, cash, check, credit cards, donor advised funds, QCDs for annual campaigns, capital campaigns, or even special campaigns. We work with your existing database solution, whether that's Razor's Edge or Portfolio, Salesforce, whatever it happens to be. We collaborate with your vendors for credit card processing, so we can process right into that vendor that you've selected for all credit card gifts. We're a PCI-compliant vendor. All the information is processed, stored, and transmitted within a secure environment. In addition to standard gift processing, I put a couple of slides, images on this slide in terms of talking about like restricted gifts or split gifts or soft credits, where the funds are designated to a specific parish or a campaign component. You know, Letter Concepts can handle these kind of complexities, split gifts where the contributions are distributed across multiple campaigns, funds, or appeals, and even soft credits here where someone donates through a family foundation or a donor advised fund. The foundation gets the credit for the actual gift, while the individual who influenced it gets the soft credit. Another slide here talking about assigned solicitors and also some custom attributes and notes. We do, depending on the device, pledge device, remittance device, whatnot, sometimes there's some creative aspect in terms of the device speaks to, I want to know more information about planned giving, or I want some prayers or some of that information. So we can, through processing directly into Razor's Edge, for example, we can capture these notes and these prayers or this information. And then these responses can be queried, reported, analyzed, and tracked. I included some screenshots here of the same kind of situations here, but in Portfolio in terms of restricted gifts and source codes. And then again, soft credits. Now that we covered like general processing and special types of gifts, let's talk more about donor relations, audit, and kind of records management. So after we do all of this processing, we store, we scan and store all of these cards, these devices, into this card scanning system. It's an application that securely stores images both front and back of all the devices. The images are organized in a searchable system and making them accessible for donor relations, finance, and audit. We also offer like secure purging and shredding of these devices based on an agreement with the client. So this information's at your fingertips. You can pull it up while you're on the phone with the donor, and then you're not having to deal with storing this information in some kind of filing cabinet or a special locked room. The screen here shows kind of a few different ways to search. You can do by batch. So while you're in Razor's Edge and you're saying, oh, this gift is part of Batch 100, you can search for all gifts that were entered into Batch 100, download a PDF of that, and then provide it to audit or finance for whatever situation that they might be going through. Or you can pull up a donor by their ID number or search it by their name and address. And then I'm going to give this over to Rebecca to show you some of the examples of some of the cards out of this card scanning system.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Matt. So here you see one style of pledge card. This is just really to show you six different ways that a pledge device or a gift card can be used as a tool to keep your data up to date as well and clean. So, of course, you want to design your pledge card to be as straightforward and understandable as possible to, first and foremost, get that gift or pledge. But also, make sure that you are serving up to your donors several ways for them to voluntarily give you information that's going to keep your data clean, accurate, and up to date. So on this pledge card, we see various donors giving updated address information. They are explaining to us that their spouse has passed away. Someone scratched out the primary addressee's name and changed it for us. We do run all of our mailings through NCOA, so you don't, interestingly, usually end up seeing returned pledge devices with a lot of new address information because that's already served up to the donor correctly on their pledge device. But then on the back side, folks are giving us their email addresses, which is key information, their phone number, and then, very importantly, their spouse name. How many of us have literally tens of thousands of Mr. John Smiths in the database, but you don't know what Mr. John Smith's wife's name is? So we're trying to get away from that and giving Mrs. John Smith a first name too. So we know who she is, and it's just that much easier to target them. And if you ever were to get word that Mr. John Smith passed, if you know his wife's name, you can cross-reference it with an obituary. I know it's a lot of work, but sometimes that tedious stuff does result in the very best data possible. Okay, and now let's, yes.
I want to make sure I understand this.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go into my batch files, y'all have already segmented it and say this whole bunch is
So these, Rebecca's showing examples here. All of these cards live in a card scanning system that Matt creates and then gives access to the client. So we don't have them segmented like this, but you can
unpack and find all these.
Well, no. So we're doing the changes. So when this comes to us and we're doing it on the lockbox end, we're implementing all of these changes, and then that's. Yeah, just showing the different examples. Exactly. But
yeah.
we're making these changes, and then these cards are being put onto that card scanning system. So if somebody then called you and said, you know, I got this X, Y, and Z, you can pull their card right up and say, well, you know, on the pledge device, and you can have that conversation in real time looking at the information that they provided you rather than having to flick through 10,000 cards and try and find, I'm trying to find your information. I'll call you back in a day or two.
Yeah, I will say, oh, go right ahead.
So that's a great question, and I'm going to take Dave's advice. I didn't do it for the first one, but I'm going to repeat the question. The question was, when these changes are being made, are they not only being made to the mailing list, but also in the CRM? The answer is yes. When we're involved on the lockbox end of things, in Razor's Edge, we directly are entering into Razor's Edge. So while we're doing those, you know, batch files and, you know, doing a batch of 100, you know, donors in that day, we'll make the biographical updates as we're going through that process.
Yeah, so to TJ's point, this is not only a great donor relations vehicle when someone calls up, has a question about their pledge, how it was entered, doesn't understand the terms in the gift details section of their acknowledgement letter. You can call this up, and you don't have to have a hard copy piece, but usually, 9 times out of 10, get to the bottom of things with the donor and resolve the issue in the space of a few minute phone call. Also, from an auditing perspective, this works quite well instead of having a room filled with cards somewhere in the chancery that are just taking up tons and tons of drawer space. This is just as good, and it's very easy to pull whatever small, detailed, diamond in the rough kind of needle in the haystack. That's the analogy I was looking for. That when an auditor asks for that needle in a haystack gift, you can find it here rather than sifting through thousands of cards. All right. Still on the data topic, this is a story I'm going to tell you. It goes back a few years. This is a case where the Diocese of Fall River, when the Catholic Foundation opened its doors in 2018, was charged with centralizing the annual appeal. For almost 80 years prior to that, the appeal had been decentralized, run at the parish level. So you can imagine all of the different fits and starts, and nothing was really happening at the same time. Nothing was happening in alignment, of course, and some pastors were being good company men and getting things out the door exactly when the bishop's office told them they should, and I think others were sort of doing whatever worked for them and their parish staff. So when when the foundation took over, it was the foundation's responsibility to capture and collect nearly 80 rosters of individual parish records. Now, for me, coming from the big hospital in Boston, never before had I been in a development house where the data was not proprietary. The data didn't belong to us. And it didn't belong to just one other organization or institution. It belonged to nearly 80 entities. So having to bring that in-house, lay it over what was already in the diocesan records, which was quite spotty in terms of quality. I think that's being diplomatic. In some cases, it was incredibly stale. And then running up and individually investigating every single discrepancy, oftentimes having to go down a rabbit hole of Google searches and, household searches, addresses, obituaries. It was painstaking and exhausting, and it took about 3 years until we got to the point in 2021 that we were ready to work with Letter Concepts to develop a data maintenance program. And so we did really hatch this and give birth to it together, the diocese working with Letter Concepts. We created a report that has two tabs. The first tab is the parish's roster that the diocese has on file, and this is culled from the data that they gave to us most recently, along with new folks who have come into the fold just supporting the diocesan annual appeal, who the parish might not even know, but we know based on the person had come forward and supported the diocese monetarily at some point. And then it also includes 7 unique columns that the parish staff can take their time and update for us. Record removals. So not record removals, but never again should this record be brought into any sort of active outreach. So is the record entirely deceased? Have they moved away from the diocese? Have they left the parish? In cases like that, we turn them into a parish agnostic code, 9999. So they still do receive mailings from us for a period of 3 years. After 3 years of inactivity, they drop off entirely. And then there were just modification columns. Did the husband pass? Did the wife pass? Is there a name change? Do we have something misspelled? Do you know of an address change that we don't know about yet? And then tab 2 is just a simple, give us your newly registered households over the last 3 or 4 months. We send this out for the Diocese of Fall River 4 times a year, and it's gained some traction over the last 3 years of it. Of course, I think in any diocese, you end up having this third situation where there's like 30% of the parishes are always doing the right thing, always in communication with you, keeping the data as aligned as possible and clean as possible together, really rowing in the same direction. Then you've got maybe 30% who are going along and trying to do what's asked of them, but you won't hear from them necessarily as often, and 30% who are kind of actively disengaged, and you have to try and get them to come to the light. So it has, however, proven to be a good way to keep things as clean and accurate as possible for this particular diocese. But of course, nothing beats a person who's on site, pounding the pavement, reading the newspapers, seeing what's going on, sort of wearing their research and data hat at all times. And it's hard because there's so many other things to do on a daily basis to keep your giving program going strong that sometimes I think we forget how important data maintenance is. It's really so fundamental. So this program has worked very well for Fall River. LC also works with the Diocese of Springfield, Massachusetts, and that's done in a somewhat different way. So for Springfield, the updates can go directly to LCI rather than having someone at the diocese take it, look at it, get it ready, and send it on to Letter Concepts. Either way, it ends up at Letter Concepts, and Letter Concepts does all the biographic updates. And then the CRM that Fall River works with is Emergent, the portfolio product, and they handle bulk batch uploads per parish of all of the newly registered households. Newly registered households are so critically important because sometimes you're deceasing, you know, deceasing donors in the thousands year after year. So that's one way to backfill your database. When you're losing good, generous, faithful people, you also need to make sure that the newly registered folks are, the mail is getting into their hands too.
Absolutely. So we're gonna jump streams a little bit here, and Matt's going to come back to talking about queries, exports, things of that nature. So getting the data that we're talking about out of the database in a digestible format in many different ways. So
I put this slide in here. It's a good slide talking about generally queries and exports in Razor's Edge and some of the rules of thumb, I would say, but there's always exceptions to this. And I just kind of want to read it out because I think this is kind of valuable. Like, when am I using a query? When am I using an export? What's the pro and con kind of thing here? So queries are usually faster to run than an export. There's a con in terms of user options can affect the output. So my account logged in under a query might export information or output, I'll use the word output information in one format, whereas TJ might be logged in as his account and output different because of user options. Not all data is accessible. So if you're trying to establish a relationship between payments and what pledge they're being applied to, you can't do that through a query. If the output includes related data types, for example, like phone numbers or emails, if you're using a query and you want to include that information, if a person has two or three phone numbers, you're going to export that record two or three times, which is not necessarily desirable if you're trying to pull a mailing list. Now you're duplicating your data. Exports, there's more options to control how a field is displayed without the specific user options affecting. Not all data is accessible, again, like a query. Some of that related information in terms of payments on what pledge they are associated with. If the output includes related data types like those phones and emails, you can actually go into the options and specify how many of them that you want. I want one, and I want maybe the most recently updated phone, and you can export one record or output one record for that constituent. There's also import that can be used as an export, kind of under the admin section, that you can get some other information that you can't necessarily get out of a query or an export, such as like what pledge these payments relate to. Usually you have to have admin privileges to run this, so not all users necessarily have this level of access to be able to do some of these things, and it's the slowest to run. I took some screenshots here for the user options. We talked about how Matt's account might output one way and TJ's account might output another way. Under the user options within Razor's Edge, there's some specific areas here that I've presented here where you can do short coding or long coding and selecting these options. Maybe you want just the parish number 123 to be exported, or maybe you want St. Mary's Parish to be exported, the text versus the kind of numerical value. So you can kind of specify that here under your user options, and this is where you would do that to get that kind of information. There's also query options. A lot of people don't know about these query options when you're creating a query. And you can go into the query options and specifically like this gift processing tab here. You might have soft credits or matching gifts, and you want to export the recipient of that. So instead of just the donor's record that the gift was applied to, maybe ABC Company, or you want to export John Smith that you soft credited the gift to, you can specify that here in these query options so that when you're pulling maybe a thank you file or a remittance file, you have that information in the file versus running two or three queries and kind of aggregating that data to try to get that information. We also have on the right-hand side some summary fields. There's very powerful in terms of queries and exports. You can use this as like criteria, or you can use it in your output, and you can like summarize things, and maybe you want sum up everything to the appeal last year that was a total of $1,000 or more, and you can have that in your criteria so that you're limiting a population in such a way. So there's a lot of options in terms of these summaries. In terms of exports here, I like to use these exports to kind of create a template of information. This template of information might be your request mailing and all the fields relevant to facilitate a request mailing. So you can structure your export with said fields that you want, maybe the primary, the spouse, the address, phone, email, one of them kind of thing, most recent maybe. And then 3 years, 5 years of giving history. And then you can leave that as like a template, go and create a query, set up your population of what the mailing is going to be, and then point that export at that query. And then you have a templated structure for which you're receiving data out of Raiser's Edge. This is good for mailings. This is also good for if you're going to do any subsequent reporting on this data and you want to have a standardized format for this information. Talk a little bit about reporting here. We do a number of different reports, whether that's increase, decrease, recurring, new donors, top donors, non-renewed, delinquency. I put a sample of a up-down report on the left-hand side where you're comparing like the number of donors, the number of gifts, the average gift over 2 years. And then there's subsequent data in terms of giving these populations for the people that increased or decreased or stayed the same year over year. On the right-hand side is what I call a delinquency dashboard, and this kind of gives an overview of the campaign at the top in terms of where the campaign stands as a whole.
That report is very useful, especially in a capital campaign context. So that report is tracking over 5, 6, 7, 8 years of people that are making monthly pledges, and if somebody falls, you know, they haven't responded to us in 60 days, they haven't responded to us in 90 days, we're able to identify at-risk pledges, at-risk givers, and give that information back. This is a high level, but we're also able to give a donor detail report of everybody, how far delinquent they are, and it really helps with redemption, especially in a capital campaign. This can be done for an annual campaign as well. A little bit less of a use case there just because with an annual campaign, we've got 12 months. If they're not, you know, we'll give them till the end of the year to finish their pledge and, you know, leave it there. But with the larger capital campaign gift, we really want to be on top of that. Matt does an excellent job of tracking that.
The report breaks down in terms of your frequency, in terms of how many installments you missed, or maybe even grouping your gifts into dollar ranges. There is detail that's kind of associated with this, and then we go through in terms of working with the client to discuss what does it mean to be delinquent. Are you financially behind, but you paid something 2 weeks ago, and maybe you're not delinquent? Or are you financially behind and you've missed said number of installments? And then factoring into your frequency if you're an annual person. And then also grace period. Okay, you got the bill in January. How many months do you have to pay that bill before we start factoring that in? So there's a huge calculation that goes into what does it mean to be delinquent, and then if there's any kind of follow-up, direct mail, what does that look like into that calculation? During input time, we have a report here called like a processing tracker here that captures all the impu bags that we receive in our facility for processing. We log them in terms of what parish, when we receive them, when they're estimated to be completed, how many items are in the bag, and then if there's any kind of notes or shipping label, FedEx, UPS, or something like that. We report on this to the diocese through the impu season on a daily or weekly basis, depending on how frequently they want to receive this. We can give them all open bags that haven't been processed yet, all completed bags, any parishes that have yet to send in a bag. There's also emails that can go along with this that can go and be tailored to the specific parish or secretary or any of the contacts at a parish that we've received your bag and giving them expectation and then that we've completed that bag as well. With some of the reports that I mentioned before, too, we also can build these reports and then send them out on said frequency if it's a monthly or a weekly report. One of the ones that we do for the Diocese of Brooklyn is every week we kind of give them the parishes an e-blast with a report that talks to where they are in terms of meeting their goal. What are completed pledges and their donors and what are open pledges so that they can kind of stay connected to these donors and, you know, helping them to achieve their goal.
Yeah. And just one more thing to add here with this tracking sheet. I think we can all agree the impu appeal time is probably the most chaotic time for any annual appeal. And this really helps to bring everything together. So any shipment that a parish is sending is tracked. We know how many pieces were sent to us. We know what's outstanding. We know when it's supposed to be completed. And, you know, it's a very helpful tool to help bring some order to that time of chaos, you know, whether that's during Lent, whether that's in the fall, whenever you're running that appeal, this is a very helpful tool.
The other thing, the last thing with this is we do priority parishes too, so that if you have some pastors that are in communication with you quite frequently, and we'd like to try and assign priority to them so that when we receive that bag, it kind of jumps priority so that we can get that taken care of as soon as possible. And a lot of this, like, queries and exports and stuff that I talk about, there's a number of clients, like, they'll ask us to do this and kind of run this and help them with it, or they'll ask us to be involved, like, can you show us, can you just kind of set this up, and then once we are familiar with it, like, we got this and we can handle it. So there's kind of these two different varieties in terms of what I see with a lot of clients across the country. And I think that kind of concludes.
Yeah, that'll wrap us up there. If anybody has any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
You mentioned a personalized.
Yeah. So Letter Concepts as a company personally does not produce those pearls, but we know several vendors that do produce them, and we have the capability. So when I say a pearl, we're receiving, you know, some string, and that's a URL, and we're converting that into a QR code. And that QR code is getting put onto the pledge card. It can go on the pledge card, it can go on the letter, wherever you want it to be. And then that's directing them to a page that is set up with their gift chart as well. So it's not just, hey, you're going to the online donation page and we're tracking you. It's the ask amounts that we want them to see as well, which is very, very cool. Very cool. So.
I will walk back and give you this.
I'll give him the mic, yeah.
I'll stand next to you.
Stay right next to her and answer, Matt.
Go back and forth.
When you talked about data cleanup specifically with respect to email addresses, do you use like zero bounce or some other?
We use zero bounce, and then we clean up this entire list, and then we give you back the results so that you can incorporate them into your CRM. So as part of the direct mail supplement for this e-blast campaign, marketing campaign, or standalone, you're getting that information back too. So you're not necessarily you pay for the campaign, but you also get that value of that data that's cleaned up as well too.
Okay. Awesome. Anybody else? Don't be shy. Dave?
Do you have any diocesan clients who use the events section of, like, Razor's Edge or whatever other database?
Yeah, there's the event section, there's a lot in terms of tracking, what kind of solicitations or something that a donor has received too, and keeping track of, what events. There's a couple of different ways to use this, but I see it a lot in terms of what mailings have been received or sent out for that individual constituent for a capital campaign or a diocesan annual campaign.
It's also a way to track attendance, too, and just keep that in perpetuity so you know when you're looking at an individual or a group at a glance who came and who RSVP'd now.
Absolutely.
All right.
Any other questions? Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. We really appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah. That's right. It's hot in here.
Yeah,
it's so hot. Oh, don't.
Sorry. Please fill out the survey if you can on the app.